Well, it's Friday. Lots to talk about. First spring weekend. It's Friday. It's the rain. All that stuff's supposed to stop by the end of the day. It's supposed to be a nice weekend. Jimmy Carter's now the oldest living U.S. president ever. George H.W. Bush was 94, like in 170 days. Jimmy Carter now 94 and like 175 days.
Wow.
He's the oldest living president ever. I don't know what you're going to do with this information, but
he's hanging in there.
Yeah, he's in pretty good shape.
Yeah. Guy had cancer.
Yeah, the guy's really in good shape, and he's still traveling around doing all kinds of stuff. A lot of these guys lived a long time. It's very tough when you're not president anymore. Like, the Bushes are very good at that. You know, these are like old swamps, skull and bones guys. They go back into their little world there, and they enjoy themselves. Obviously, for Hillary Clinton, it's a frustrating experience. She's just so desperate for power in the spotlight. Now, Bill Clinton has hobbies that occupy his time, so he manages to keep busy and enjoy himself. he's usually down in Arkansas there at the Clinton Library, which has like a Hugh Hefner party pad on top of it. It does. It has a sauna and a pool and a party room.
Oh, nice.
He enjoys himself down there. And even when once and twice a year when he comes up to Chappaqua, if you're in any of those restaurants up there, you know Bill's there very often with friends.
Friends, oh.
Having dinner, traveling around.
He and Hillary don't have dinner very often again?
I hear they spend like maybe 4 or 5 nights a year together. She's a lot of the time in Washington. They have a big house in Georgetown. She spends a lot of time there.
Oh, that's great.
And Chappaqua, where when she's up there, she meets with people and drinks a lot. That's apparently her hobby.
Okay.
And she's like now the old woman in Sunset Boulevard, you know, just rambling around this big empty house. Who else? Well, let's see. You know, the interesting one was Herbert Hoover. He was the president in the, like the early 30s. Guy lived forever. Nobody really knew it, but he lived in the Waldorf till like 1968 or something.
Really nice.
Yeah, and he was he would walk around New York, apparently like in the 60s. You could see this old man walking around. It was Herbert Hoover, former president.
Well, the one thing they said about Carter and Bush was they both were one-term presidents, so they didn't get 8 years of the stress.
Yeah, that well, it's not the stress. It just means they could live longer. Well, but Bush was really 12 years, 8 years
well,
as
he
vice,
was with
vice president. So Carter tried to look busy with his Habitat for Humanity. Look at this. He's hammering in nails for 20 minutes to take the picture, and then he's gone. And Clinton tried to bring him back. Remember Bill Clinton tried to really bring him back and let him be his chief negotiator in Bosnia?
Mm-hmm.
And then he found out this Carter was a total renegade working out his own deals. And Clinton, then he tried him one more time. It was Haiti or somewhere. And Carter was double-crossing him and setting up shop for himself down there, and Clinton had to fire him.
That's good, yeah.
Cut him off. Yeah, nice man, Carter, but he had quite an ego. Was trying to, like, he wasn't representing the U.S. He was representing Jimmy Carter.
Trying to redo his legacy.
Yeah. So, hey, the Mueller report could come out at any moment. Could come out today, could come out next week. Everything is done. The investigation is over from multiple sources. Top investigators have left the Mueller team, gone back to their old jobs. They have spent this entire week writing up the report. So at any moment, could be today, could be, I don't think it'll happen over a weekend, but it could be Monday. At some point, you're going to be listening to the radio and they're going to break in with the Mueller report has been handed in to Attorney General William Barr.
You think Democrats are going to be very upset?
Well, here's the problem. Now, we know a few things from sources. There is nothing except what you've heard. All the indictments you've heard about, that's it. There are no other indictments. And it's a firm Justice Department rule. If somebody's not getting indicted, for instance, President Trump, we know he's not getting indicted, or anybody else, the Trump family, nobody's getting indicted. We know that. If they're not getting indicted, you are not allowed to say anything bad about them in a report. You can't not charge somebody and then lay out bad things they've done. You either have to charge them or not charge them. Now, you might say, well, what about James Comey? He didn't charge Hillary, but he stood there for 20 minutes listing all the horrible, terrible things she did. That's why he got fired. In the Rosenstein letter asking for Comey to be fired, that's what he used as his case, that it was a tremendous violation of Justice Department policy.
Well, who are they going to talk about in this report? Manafort? Cohen's not in it.
Well, Cohen...
No, that's a separate case, right?
Well, no, it'll be in there, but it'll say it was referred to local authorities. There might be things in there like Roger Stone, and this was... Okay. We'll say we referred this to local authorities. There was a lot of speculation. Mueller could do this different ways. He could write a very brief summary of what he did, a couple of pages, and hand that in, or he could write a 500-page narrative of what he did. Now everybody seems to believe it'll be just a couple of pages, just laying out who was indicted and why. He might list who was not indicted, but he can't really go into why. So this everything you know now is all you're going to know. There's nothing new coming out in the Mueller report.
We waited 2 years for this?
Yeah. So, and the big thing was Paul Manafort. But all those charges are from a million years ago when he had his consulting business. And at the time of the charges, the stuff he was doing wrong, at that time he was working for McCain. So... And so I don't know when this is all handed in and you find out you, and it came out of your paychecks, this taxpayer money, you just paid $35 million to have Paul Manafort's consulting business of 2006 investigated. So the other thing is General Flynn had some side business where he was taking a contract from Turkey to do something. That's in there.
George Papadopoulos?
George Papadopoulos, absolutely nothing. In fact, he pled guilty. He just wanted to get it over with. And they sentenced, what did they sentence him to? 10 days in jail?
Yeah. Well, it's something like that, yeah.
10 days in jail. Trump didn't even know George Papadopoulos. Who else was there? Rick Gates.
Yeah.
There's somebody I'm forgetting about. One other guy. Yeah, Flynn. Yeah, no, there's another guy. What's his name? I'll think of it, but I can't remember. You'll know the name when it. Carter Page.
Oh, Carter Page.
Carter Page.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
He didn't really do anything wrong either. Carter Page didn't do anything wrong at all.
He just lied, right?
It's debatable whether he lied. You know, in the case of Flynn, that was a very questionable thing. I think at some point Flynn gets pardoned for all that because what they did was highly unethical. Normally, if you want to interview your Mueller, FBI, you want to interview Flynn, who was in the White House at the time, you notify him that you'd like to conduct an interview. He then gets his lawyers or whatever he'd like to do, bring a lawyer with him or talk to a lawyer first, and then you sit down and do the interview. With Flynn, they gave him this whole con job about why he shouldn't have a lawyer and they should just come talk to him right now, no lawyer.
Hmm.
And I don't know why, but Flynn said yes. And then the FBI agents left after the interview. Now, they're claiming he lied to these agents, although the agents themselves say they don't feel they were lied to. They actually said they felt it was off the top of his head, and Flynn just couldn't remember something correctly. And in every case, where every other case, you're allowed to correct that. You say, you know what, I went and looked it up, and here's what. But they didn't allow a correction. Instead, they charged him with lying to the FBI, although the two agents say they don't feel they were lied to.
Hmm.
So, and then some people think the whole thing would be thrown out anyway, that you didn't allow the guy to get himself a lawyer or properly. And there's no way he should have met with the FBI just like that. And they shouldn't be going into the White House.
Sounds like a pretty fair investigation to me.
Well, also remember, Mueller hired 13 guys, all Hillary Clinton donors, fans, supporters.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, the whole thing stinks. Once it's over with, and once it's released, you will hear a lot of stuff about Mueller. That's when they'll really go after him. Now, what do you think happens when it's, let's say, they just release everything you already know, all the Trump haters who were waiting 2 years for this, what will happen? Will they get worse? Will they calm down?
No, they're going to get worse.
What way?
Well, they'll say, well, there's some suspicious activity that we need to further investigate, and we'll need hearings by the House Oversight Committee.
Yeah, but that's something you got to wonder about that.
They're not going to drop it.
Yeah, but people say if Mueller couldn't find anything with $35 million, and he did bring in 13 top investigators, and they had 2 years, if he can't find it, this fat idiot, Nadler, this goofy weirdo Nadler's going to find it?
Yes, give us his tax returns, then we'll get to the bottom of this.
This bug-eyed, half-brained Adam Schiff is going to find it? You got to admit, if you walked into a police station and said, I have an important case, I need to see a detective. Mueller came out, you might say, well, this guy looks like he could handle it. If Nadler came out, you would say, hey, can I talk to somebody else? If Adam Schiff came out, you wouldn't want to tell him your case.
Yeah, that's true.
So I don't know what they're going to do. It's something to worry about, actually. When the Mueller report comes out and nothing's there, will these people go really crazy? Will they start marching in the streets?
Well, they can't drop it.
Well, what will they do? It'll be like Philadelphia if they lose the game where they're like rioting in the streets.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? I don't know. It's something to worry about. I don't know. It's it's what are you going to do on MSNBC all day? They'll start why? They'll start attacking Mueller. You know all the stuff, bad stuff I told you about Mueller?
Oh, they'll go after him, yeah.
Investigations he's bungled up in the past. I bet you that's what you see all day. Rachel Maddow and everything. Why Mueller's crooked. Why Mueller's corrupt. Why Mueller should have recused himself.
Wow.
Mueller had a lot of conflicts of interest with Trump. He should have recused himself. They'll bring up all that. They'll trash Mueller for a few days. I think Nadler and Schiff and all those people are hoping there's nothing in there. They'll be thrilled if nothing's in there because that'll be their excuse to keep going.
Right.
Yeah, so. But so far, Nadler has ordered the whole Trump family, Don Jr., Ivanka, Jared, everybody to come testify. And one by one, they've all refused. Even Roger Stone wrote back saying he will not appear. His attorneys have asked him not to. He's not appearing. So they've all turned it down.
Well, the other thing they're looking for now is they want the transcripts of the president's conversations with Putin.
Well, you can't have that. That's never going to happen. They started this whole scenario after the Putin meeting that, why did the president meet alone for an hour with Putin? What was that all about? For 1 hour, he was alone with him. They never mentioned to you that every president has always done that. In the case of Obama, he spent a whole day alone with him. In the case of Bush, he invited Putin to Camp David to spend the whole weekend alone with him. In the case of another case, Bush had him down at the ranch for the weekend to be alone. There's no transcripts of this alone stuff. So
but we can't trust Trump. He must have been trying to build a hotel.
Every president. And that's another thing. This Schiff lie about the Trump Tower in Moscow would have been the most lucrative deal of his life. There's no way it would have been that lucrative. The Chicago hotel's more lucrative. Nothing would have been lucrative about it. So we'll see. Just keep an eye on it. It could happen at any time. Boeing will be fine. A couple of minor corrections to the plane is all it'll take. Greg Kelly, who's a great, he was a Marine fighter pilot. He talked to a lot of pilots. There's 275 of those Boeing jets flying every day in this country with great American pilots. Nobody's ever had a problem. Ethiopian Airlines, apparently the standards aren't that high. When you get on the Ethiopian plane, it's not necessarily a former Marine fighter pilot flying your plane.
Even so, they kind of cheaped out on some of the safety protocol.
Yeah, could be, but they'll be fine.
And they only gave these guys 56 minutes of training.
Well, but again, 275 of those planes fly every day in the country. Nobody's ever had a problem with them. So, but they'll have to correct it. The two sensors will have to be corrected. Yeah. Every plane will have to go with two sensors. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The training module thing, you'll have to more time on that. But the first cancellation has occurred. It's some country somewhere that I've never heard of canceled their order for these planes, which totals $6 billion. So that Boeing takes a hit on that. The reason this is so crucial is Boeing has orders for 4,600 of these planes.
Look, I'm a little nervous about getting on one of these things once they approve it. I'd be a little nervous, really.
Okay, be nervous about it. But meantime, not one of them has had an accident in this country. And get on a different plane, and you think there's no problem that you haven't heard about with that plane? You know, in the old days, you'd get on the plane, you'd see the pilot come in, he looked like Sully Sullenberger, older gray-haired guy. Now, it's like some 26-year-old who's looking at his phone. It's a guy who was an Uber driver the week before. So you just got to. It's the pilot. That's the whole thing. The other countries were so quick to ground all those Boeing planes. But you have to remember, there's only two companies in the world. Boeing, which is basically a monopoly. The only competitor is Airbus, which is a French company. That's one reason everybody's so quick to go after Boeing. The other countries hate us. They would love to hurt Boeing and help Airbus, which is the only competitor. Airbus made a tremendous mistake by not building this sort of plane. Boeing was smarter, and they realized there's more short-term flights. So these big jets to do short runs was where the future was. So they ordered 4,600 of them to be made. Airbus went with the big long-distance planes. And it turns out they guessed wrong on what was going to be needed.
Airbus is a good plane.
Yeah, it's a good plane, but they just guessed wrong. They didn't set up to make these planes. So that's one reason every country was quick to shut Boeing down. They're trying to give Airbus some breathing room to catch up to Boeing on this. So we'll see. I shouldn't say this. Do we have any airline sponsors? I don't think. I'd be afraid to fly on any plane right now. I don't care.
Why? Because there hasn't been any accidents? It's very safe.
It's very safe, but sometimes, again, these look at they can't even find your luggage. You think, you know, you ever watch them? You ever go out and like, you know, on a runway and watch them do maintenance on a plane? It's frightening.
I know. It is scary to watch that stuff.
You know, I was watching a guy fix a plane at the airport, and he unfolds this instruction sheet. It's just replacing a part. And he's spreading it out on the wing, and he's reading it. I could tell he's never done this part in his life. And so I asked him, I said, why does that guy not know? And he has to keep looking at these instructions. He goes, well, he's not a mechanic for this airline. I said, well, who is he then? There's like a couple of mechanics that handle all the different airlines. So he's never seen that plane before. Oy. Or that. I'm just saying. We better change the subject. We're frightening people here. Mayor de Blasio, God bless him. We'll talk about him in a minute. He's pushing now for this congestion pricing.
Everyone's feeling urgency. I have not met a single person with an entirely different plan. Am I worried? No. Do I think we got a lot of work to do in the next week? Yes. And I'll be doing it myself up in Albany and working the phones.
This Cuomo and de Blasio will not rest until they've pushed us into total bankruptcy. They are they call this congestion pricing. It's a driving tax. It's a tax on driving. That's all it is. It has not, it's never in any part of the world ever done anything to ease congestion. What the problem is, they know they can't raise the property tax or the state tax anymore. They know they're stuck. They can't do it. So they're looking for extra taxes. Now, when you get in your car, you know how much tax you pay on every gallon of gasoline? $3 a gallon. Yeah. $2.80 of that is government taxes. So you've already paid all the tax in the world to get in this car. Now, if you want to drive anywhere, they want to tax you again. It's like double tax. It's a driving tax. That's what it is.
It sure is.
Yeah.
It's driving people out of the state.
Driving people out of the state. The problem is only 7,000 wealthy families moved out last year, according to Governor Cuomo. Now they want to make that 20,000 this year and start to get middle-class families to move out. So that's why the congestion pricing. And we'll talk about this in a second. We'll get to, Gillibrand released the most embarrassing video. We'll get to that coming up. Check out the webpage. Watch this. The year is 2008. Chris Rock, at that time, is the number one most popular comedian in the world. And McCain is running for president. And Chris Rock's big routine is 2008. McCain's not a hero. He was captured. Watch an audience of Democrats roaring with laughter as he ridicules McCain. I can't play it on the air because it has too many dirty words in it. Wait till you hear the things he calls McCain. So that's up on the webpage. Also, you know, they keep picking on this Beto O'Rourke, but take a look at the list of accomplishments that he has. We put that up. And, watch nutty Maxine Waters flip-flop like crazy. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com/Mark. 710WOR.com/Mark. Well, let's take a look at the latest movies. What did you see this weekend? Allison Bales, excellent film critic. You could go to AllisonBales.com or follow Allison Bales on Twitter. Allison, how you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good. Anything good to see tonight?
Well, you always ask me if there's anything good to see. I'll start by talking about Us, which is the new horror movie from Jordan Peele, who had such huge success with Get Out. And this is his follow-up film, which is getting a huge amount of acclaim and, you know, rah-rahs all over the place. I saw it and was so disappointed. I'm not a big horror fan. I don't go to the sort of schlocky horror films much, but I figured on the strength of Get Out, I would go and see Us, because I thought Get Out had something to say and said it very, with humor and with scares aplenty. This one, my feeling was it's a good premise that starts off very well, pulling on influences like Hitchcock and Spielberg, definitely sort of some movie lovers nods in there. And it's about a family on vacation at a beach place, and they have a home invasion by a family that looks exactly like them. They're their replicas. They're their twins.
Hey, that sounds good.
It's a great premise. It's the premise is that we all have these sort of alter egos or these, you know, other halves who are living in our shadows, and suddenly they want revenge. But the film goes nowhere. So once you've seen the intruders, I mean, like any horror film, the key, I think, is to keep the boogeyman in the dark kind of thing, just like the shark in Jaws or, the creepy monsters in A Quiet Place. You don't really want to see them. The fact that you see the family, the suspense is gone, and then it becomes just, oh, how can I, slash this person to death with a fire poker or a golf stick? golf club, I guess.
Golf stick.
Golf stick. You can tell I play golf.
You're British people. You got your own words for everything.
So it's just, to me, there's no suspense in that. It's just brutal, bloody killing for the middle part of the film. And the film is 2 hours long. And then it tries to have this big twist, sort of ooh ending, which I saw coming, and doesn't make any sense. So I left the cinema highly disappointed with Jordan Peele, although Lupita Nyong'o, who plays the lead character, is incredibly good in the two roles that she plays. She plays the mother and the shadow of the mother.
All right, but how about something good that we could see?
Well, I really like this film called Hotel Mumbai, which is a very difficult film to watch. And it does raise the question about, you know, whether we should be making films about these horrific disasters, global disasters that we live through. This is about the killing in Mumbai, India, back in 2008, I believe, where a bunch of terrorists went through the train station, got into a hotel, a couple of very exclusive hotels, and held people hostage and went around killing people.
Well, I don't want to watch that on a Friday night.
Well, no, and I'm cautionary about advocating for it, because I do feel in some way this is just exploiting these terrible situations. Yeah. But it's a little bit like that film United 93 about the plane that went down in 2001. There's good filmmaking to be had. And this one, what's really remarkable about this film is that it tells a story from the staff of the hotel, who are not your American tourists. They're not the glamorous Americans who usually are our entries into these kind of stories. So it's Dev Patel, who plays a Sikh waiter, and he and the chef at the hotel really help a lot of the guests to escape. And it's a story of heroism, and it's a story of bravery, and it's also, and I hate to say it, it's also a very tense thriller that is quite exciting to watch.
Oh, okay.
So at the same time, you're thinking, eesh.
Yeah.
So that's one I recommend with a reservation.
All right. Well, I hate to say we're out of time, but everybody go to AllisonBales.com or follow Allison Bales on Twitter. And Allison, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
All right, take care. Oh, you know who will be with us in a moment? Tony Danza.
Nice.
Tony Danza, who's got like a 9 series going right now. He's actually going to be at the Carlisle next week. He's, you know, he was a star on Broadway a year or two ago. We'll talk to him in just a second. But first, on 710 WOR, let's get all the latest news. Here's Joe Bartley. Well, of course, you know, Tony Danza, star of Broadway, movies, TV, had a big hit Broadway show recently. Of course, a million TV series, Good Cop on Netflix, Taxi, Who's the Boss, and great singer, dancer. He'll be at the Carlisle next week. Tuesday, the 26th, is opening night. But you can go see him at the Carlisle 26th through the 30th next week. But make a reservation. It sells out fast. Tony Danza, how you doing?
I'm great, Mark. Thank you. You know, I did something I haven't done a lot of. It's really exciting. I was singing on Good Morning America, singing and dancing.
Oh, my God.
Wow. That was exciting.
Well, I know. You're a guy that loves to get up at 4 a.m.,
I did. I mean it, man. I was there at 5. So, you know, I was up earlier, too, because I wanted to get a little workout in before I got the thing. So,
yeah.
But it was fun. It was really fun. Great crowd. And, you know, Strahan and Sarah, Mike Strahan, and they have a real nice thing going on over there.
Yeah. So Tuesday night at the Carlisle, that's quite it's a very prestigious place when you think of who sat on that stage before you.
Yeah, it's true. And not only that, but the you know, the people that they have there usually are very high caliber.
Yeah.
Even you're talking about Bobby Short, of course, but you know, the Pizzarellis play there, and
Steve Tyrell
Alfred plays there. Tyrell plays there. Yeah, so it is a prestigious I'm excited, believe me. I am so excited. And you know, opening night, I think I got a lot of people. I got a lot of people from PAL coming, you know, from the Police Athletic League. I got Alan Alder and Chris Lloyd and Carol Kane and my daughters. It's going to be quite a night.
Yeah, it's a Tuesday night, opening night. Can you give us a little preview, like some of the songs? Now, you do the Great American Songbook. Very important for every generation to know that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I do everything from As Long As I'm Singing by Bobby Darin to one of your favorites, That's All.
Good. I love that. He does the best up-tempo.
You know, that's what I tried to do. I tried to swing it up. You know, I like to swing sing. I like to sing, you know, like, you know, one of the songs I do in the act is You Go to My Head. the great Matt Danish. I mean, no, the great. I don't know who wrote that one. J. Fred Coots and Gillespie wrote.
Yeah.
They also wrote. You know what else they wrote? They wrote Santa Claus is Coming to Town. But anyway, you go to my head is a ballad. You go to my head, but we swing it up, and you got to hear it. It sounds. It takes on a whole new feeling when you swing it up.
Well, that's what Bobby Darin was famous for. He'd take these ballads and do them really up-tempo and then make them really work.
I have a lot of fun with that. And, I am backed by, I'm not kidding you. One of the things you learn when you're out there doing this for the amount of time I've been doing it, over 20 years, it's all about how good the band is. And when I tell you, I got a great band. I got a legendary music director. His name's John Otto.
Oh, he's great.
He's a legend here in New York. Played with Rosemary Clooney for many years. I was lucky a few years ago, and we've been together ever since. Eddie Cagavelli on drums, Dave Shoup, and John Arbor, all guys in New York are very, all well-known. They played Broadway shows and for all the entertainers in the city. So, having that really strong band behind you. And this morning, we received we did a CD, a recording of the show we did at Brooklyn College last year. And we got a CD of it this morning, and I'll tell you something. I've been listening to it, and I can't stop listening to the band. I'm not even listening for myself because they're so good. So it's just a lot of times you think I'm up there by myself, but you're not. You're up there with four other guys.
Yeah, and so go see Tony Danza at the Carlisle. He opens Tuesday night. He'll be there all next week. Tony Danza at the Carlisle. It's a great, great show. Hey, you mentioned the Police Athletic League. We're both on the board of that, and you do this, not only this great work you do for the charity, but you put together a group of the kids from the PAL and the cops, and you have taken them on network television all over the place.
Yeah, Mark, I'm so excited about this. We were doing a benefit to the teen acting program, and we had some cops that could sing, so I said, let's put them together and do The House I Live In, that great American song.
Yeah.
And I was watching them, and I thought, wait a minute, do you remember the Harlem Boys Choir? Why can't this be the New York City Cops and Kids Chorus? And so we started, we got a date to sing at the tree lighting. That was our first. And then we were, last Thursday night, we're at Cipriani's on 42nd Street in a giant place. And they killed. They blew everybody away. Mark, the best part of it was not only do they sound great, but the joy. Seeing the kids and the cops doing something so joyful, It sends such a great message. I mean, it just makes it really, it almost brings you to tears. I'm not kidding you. That's how great it is.
Well, Tony Danza, not only doing all these great performances, but a lot of great work for charity. Hey, what did you tell me the other day? Did you say you had a little reunion of Taxi, you and Danny DeVito?
Yeah, Danny was in town. He's busy as hell. He's got that big movie coming out, Dumbo, and he's on that commercial plays all the time, but he's really hot as a pistol.
Yeah.
But he happened to be in town. He called me up and he said, hey, can we put this, we get a dinner together. I said, let me call around. So I called Carol Kane and she was free. Chris was out of town. And Judd made us think he was coming, but he was in L.A. So it was really just the three of us, me, Danny, and Carol. But trust me, that show, those relationships that we built in that show are so strong and so it's so important to us that it was one of the great nights we've had in a long time. I know it. It really. I enjoy being. Danny's a riot, believe me, and Carol's a character, and so it's just. And you know what's funny? I thought about it. It's like falling off a log. You don't see him for a while.
Yeah.
You see him and you're right back where you were. It was really beautiful. I thank you for reminding me.
Hey, so when you're on a show like Taxi, it's such a big hit. It's like I Love Lucy. Like you're on television now for the rest of eternity. That's in reruns forever, everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, it still stands up. That's what's great about it. You watch Taxi. A couple of years ago, they had a telethon here. A marathon here in New York. I watched 19 episodes. I just couldn't stop. I kept going, all right, one more. All right, one more. And you know what? I laugh so hard, and the jokes stand up, the writing, and even some of the writing is like you could apply it to what's going on in now as opposed to what was going on in 1978 to 83,
Yeah.
It's just really that good, the writing. That's how good it is. And, a lot of guys get a break in Hollywood because The guy that gets a break is cheaper. Let's be honest. But you don't get a break like Taxi. And that's a once-in-a-lifetime break.
Well, everybody go see Tony Danza, The Carlisle. He opens Tuesday night. It's the whole week. Boy, you got to be pretty good to get a whole week at The Carlisle. Usually, most people, it's one or two nights.
Oh, they give you a suite and everything. Oh, yeah, and you know what I'm doing? I'm looking for the underground tunnels. You know, the underground tunnels into that hotel. Because when John F. Kennedy was president, that was the New York White House. And supposedly, when the beautiful starlet sang happy birthday, Mr. President, to him at the Garden, she was sneaked into the hotel through the underground tunnels. So I got to see if I can find them.
Well, I've seen the room that he used. He had a suite where he would meet Marilyn Monroe. But you're right. They would sneak her in through an underground tunnel into a service elevator.
I want to know where this tunnel is, man. That's what's killing me.
I don't think you should find out, because knowing you, people will be sneaking in every which way. They'll be. So you stay in the Carlisle when you work there?
No, I'm gonna stay home. But you do get a suite. You can stay there if you were out of town. You would stay there.
Yeah.
I think last time my manager stayed there. Oh. That's what happened. Yeah.
That's good. It's only $1,800 a night. He might as well use the room. So.
Yeah, but you know what it's great for, Mark, is after the show, everybody comes up to the suite and everybody hangs out. It's one of the best parts of doing the show there.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody who's come to see you that night, you know, your friends, you go upstairs and have a drink and talk and. I mean, let me tell you, this is truly one of the great jobs you get in showbiz. And so, you know, you really try to savor every moment of it.
Well, it's a legendary place. It's one of the most magical New York nights you can have. So everybody go see Tony Danza. He's at the Carlisle all next week, the 26th through the 30th. And, just, you know, you can look for him all over television, Netflix, everywhere. What's that Johnny Carson show? I love that show.
Oh, the show is called There's Johnny.
Yeah,
it's on Hulu.
If you love Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, There's Johnny. It is a great show. It's a show about The Tonight Show, and he plays Freddie DeCordova, the producer. It's a brilliant show. So go watch.
Yeah, you know, Paul
Reiser's in it.
Paul Reiser wrote it. Yeah, that's who wrote it, yeah.
Amazing show. But go see Tony Danza at The Carlisle. He's there next week. Hey, Tony Danza, thanks for being with us.
All right, Mark, I love you. I miss you. We'll see you soon.
All right, see you soon. Take care. And everybody check out the webpage. Some great stuff up on the webpage. Hey, watch this. This whole John McCain's not a hero because he was captured. Chris Rock is the guy that created that. It was one of his big routines in 2008. That's where Donald Trump got it from. He kind of plagiarized it from Chris Rock. I have found the original routine. This is an HBO special. It's Chris Rock talking about McCain's not a hero because he was captured. Watch this. Also, Beto O'Rourke, people make fun of him, but really, take a look at this list of his accomplishments. We have it up on the webpage. Maxine Waters, a little crazy. Watch this. She's caught flip-flopping. Watch her try to talk her way out of it. It's all up on the webpage. Go to 710WOR.com/Mark. 710WOR.com/Mark. Well, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand and Mayor de Blasio, their poll ratings in the toilet. I mean, below 30%, just no popularity, very unpopular. So what do you do when you're that unpopular? Run for president. And, you know, Beto O'Rourke, Ocasio-Cortez, they do very well on Instagram. They post, you know, she's got a video of him, she's cooking, he's at the dentist. They do pretty well with those viral videos. So this, whenever these old stiffs try to do it, it doesn't work. Like Elizabeth Warren with that cringeworthy video of her, let me get me a beer, or where there was one of Gillibrand yesterday working out in the gym with two little dumbbells, and you can see as she's doing it, she's not exactly Schwarzenegger in a gym. She's awful. It's just the most cringeworthy video in the world. Let's take a call or two. Let's go to Dave in Chicago. Hey, Dave.
Yes, good morning, Mark. With the news of Disney buying 21st Century Fox, it brought to mind two items.
Yes.
The first is the fad of colorizing the black and white movies. And, Mark, the second was using dead celebrities in commercials, such as Dirt Devil and Chris Farley for DirecTV.
Yeah, remember they used to do that. Here's Marilyn Monroe in a commercial. Here's Humphrey Bogart in a commercial. But now they realize no millennial knows who any of these people are. It has no value anymore. Although, sometimes didn't they do it with Michael Jackson? Although I think that's off the table now, too. Speaking of which, people are confused by this. Disney bought the Hollywood movie studio of Fox. Disney will have nothing to do with the Fox News Channel or Channel 5 here in New York or any of that. Well, we're out of time. Mueller report, it could happen. Even today, it'll come out at any moment. There's nothing about Trump in there. There's no other indictments except what you know about. That's all it's going to be, according to multiple sources. So keep an eye out for that. Could happen at any moment. Rush is coming up next. Sean Hannity at 3. And then at 6 o'clock, it's WOR Tonight. I'm here every day, 10 to noon. I'll be back on Monday. If you missed any shows, you can go to the website. You always get the podcast there. So have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday, 10 a.m., right here on 710 WOR.